Back in Jan 2023, when I launched this podcast, the mission was to spark more conversations around the subject of retention and user engagement, a topic which is often overlooked. To understand how stakeholders perceive this critical subject and to speak to as many individuals as possible to uncover where brands struggle with retention-led growth and how partners like us can assist them. While many speakers have just been catching on or in the early stage of utilizing the MarTech stack and engagement tools, legacy companies, one of them being Airtel, have always been masters of the game. They've had to focus on retention early days since the 90s. It took us a while to get them on the show, and I had a lot of questions. What does retention mean for telcos? What does Airtel do to ensure users transition from prepaid to postpaid? How do their massive systems communicate with each other to prevent loyal customers from churning? And there is always going to be competition, right? So what is their next growth frontier? Joining me today is Anshul, the AVP of Growth at Airtel. He answers all these questions for us. This is episode 43, and I'm your host, Ankur Gattani. Let's get started. Here we have with us Anshul, who leads a big part of online marketing efforts for Airtel. And would love to understand, Anshul, a bit of your journey. Thank you so much for joining us today. But let's just start with, what your journey has been to this point.
Yeah. Thanks, Ankur, for having me. So really excited to have this conversation. I head online growth for Airtel. I started my journey after doing my MBA. I joined Cognizant as a digital marketing consultant. There, worked with a bunch of brands. One of the interesting brands which I worked with was with PepsiCo India. At that time, PepsiCo also was figuring out how to launch or how to sell services through online ecosystem.
Have they figured out yet? Still early days, right? For FMCG, it's still a very different ballgame. Exactly. But sure.
So at that time, the e-grocers of the world were actually entering the country. And then they actually were thinking, what should their strategy be?
Sure.
So very interesting stint there. After that, I joined Network 18, which is a broadcasting industry. A very, very different industry than what currently I am doing.
Sure.
I was the brand manager or in the marketing team of news channels, which is News 18 India, CNN News 18. In fact, earlier we had ETV set of channels. So all the regional channels were called ETV UP.
Correct, the Bangla and
channels. So the ETV and the state name.
Right.
So we actually thought that everything should now roll up to News 18 umbrella.
Sure.
So, fortunately, I was part of the team which actually led this transition. And it was very, very interesting. We used multiple events. We used actually all forms of marketing that was possible then. So a very, very traditional marketing which I was leading there.
Okay.
Then we thought of why should we also have a newspaper?
Okay.
So and at that time our customer research also told us that there is a need of a weekly newspaper where you can actually have news in a much, much more detailed manner.
Okay.
And people like, high value people like maybe us might want to read it.
Sure. Right?
So we actually launched First Post Print.
Wow.
So this was a newspaper that we launched, and First Post is one of our website. So we launched First Post Print, and I was luckily, I was part of almost like a startup within a company.
Sure.
Where five of us were leading everything. We figured out which paper to get. We figured out what content to write about. We figured out what should be the marketing, etc. So yeah, very, very interesting times there.
Full-fledged GTM.
Yeah. After that, I realized that I should learn digital marketing. I should get into online space. This was three and a half years. I thought, let's try something else. And I got an opportunity from Oyo.
Okay.
And this, I think, was again a turning point because, suddenly moving from a very, very traditional business to Oyo, which is completely digital, plus being a startup, right? So the ecosystem was very
The pace different. Itself is very different.
Yeah. So there, at Oyo, every 3 to 4 months, the role has to change.
Yeah.
So, and that was the beauty of the company. Because every 3 to 4 months you get to learn new things. So there did a bunch of roles, even headed social media marketing for a while globally, which was very different than what I was doing. From there, joined Airtel. This was almost 4 years back. I joined Airtel as part of the growth team, where I started with leading the growth for DTH. And then, evolved to now I lead the growth for all LOBs, all lines of businesses.
On the digital ecosystem, I would
On the digital ecosystem. So the responsibility of the team is to get users to Airtel via any digital channel.
Got it.
So if you have to buy prepaid, postpaid, DTH, broadband, anything, either you can walk into our store,
sure,
or you can come to our website and then, you know, drop a lead or show purchase intent, mm-hmm, and we will deliver.
Sure.
So my team is responsible to actually get lots of users through our digital ecosystem.
Understood. Fair enough. And you mentioned this whole journey between traditional ecosystems and a completely new age, new economy, very fast-paced company, and then now back to Airtel.
Yeah.
Do you notice a degree of difference? You know, what would be the top, let's say, three things which you feel are different in a world of OMV, world of Airtel?
Oh, I don't think there is much of a difference to be.
There's not much of a difference, or there's not much in common?
And not much of a difference in terms of pace.
Okay.
So when I actually came from OYO to Airtel, I really thought that one thing will be very different will be that OYO was very, very fast paced.
Great.
OYO will, and Airtel will be a little less.
Yeah.
You know, it's a traditional company, etc. Completely. Nobody, it's exactly the same.
Same as, okay. So that's interesting,
rigor,
you know?
Rigor in the telecom industry has to have been there.
Mm.
And in Airtel, you know, you will find a lot of rigor. You will also, so a startup will give you a lot of opportunity to experiment.
Sure.
Airtel also does in its own unique way. Because we will, if we launch something, it will be at scale.
Mm.
So the concept is, so the concept is that you have to pilot first, experiment at a smaller scale.
Right.
If it works, why not?
And then you have several such things going on at all times anyway, because 100%. That's the scale of the canvas you do have available.
Correct.
Very interesting. So, you know, this is about retention marketing. So I'm going to veer in the world of retention and marketing, Anshul. Help us understand what is retention in the world of telecom, because you've been there for the last 4 years. You've seen marketing across multiple lenses, but telcos are one of the most, let's say, early adopters or thinkers about retention, because that's the nature of the business, right? It's, you don't make money in the first recharge or the first time somebody pays a bill. You'll make money over a period of time. So what does retention mean in your world?
So as you rightly said, we are in a annuity business, right? Which means we are in a subscription business. So for us, retention is a key. So let's say if I have a customer who is on prepaid, postpaid, any of our line of business, I would want this customer to stay with us for years.
Sure.
And then is only then we actually make money.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, retention is also of two types. You can actually, one kind of retention is that there shouldn't be any service disruption,
mm-hmm,
by not paying the bill.
Okay.
So for example, a prepaid user, not recharging at the time his account is, you know, getting
zero,
disabled.
Mm.
He can recharge after 10 days also. But as a company at this scale, we lose a lot of money.
Sure.
Right?
So this is a, you know, crores of money loss. If, let's say, you know, half of people who are recharging today don't recharge today, it'll be a nightmare.
Correct. So one of the key thing is how to make sure that everyone is paying the bill on time or everyone is recharging on time so that there's no service disruption for them. And obviously,
and that's lost revenue, and this is perishable in some sense, because if correct, that day is gone, it's gone.
It's gone, exactly. Mm. So this is one form. The second form is also churn.
Okay.
So which means, let's say, a customer from Airtel can actually go to our competitor.
Sure.
Right? So, and this is a very, very big risk, or big problem to solve. Because
it remains that way? I mean, I'm sure there were spikes in this risk perception, and then it stabilized at some point, and it's still an everyday question. But how big is that a topic for you today?
Very, very big topic,
yeah,
because our country is too large and there are still pockets in the country where, let's say, a customer would feel that our network is not that strong.
Sure.
And network also is also driven by a lot of perception, right?
Right.
A customer would feel that our network is not strong, but the competitors is. The reality could be both networks are not that great in that
right,
particular area.
Sure.
So for us, churn or people porting out is a very, very big topic, which we continuously ponder upon.
You know, so a lot of components get into that whole churn, and we'll get to that. But I would also imagine the whole lens, given that you are almost, what, a 25-plus year operation now. In that sense, the maturity of the infrastructure, the system processes, the brand itself, lots of things which are much more mature compared to a lot of other spaces that you've been, right? OYO was like a couple of years old, perhaps, when you started. So from that lens, when you look at the whole idea of lifetime value, because retention over a 5-year period should also mean more revenue from a certain sort of customer, because ultimately the prepaid postpaid ratio remains what it remains. So how do you kind of traverse that journey of, okay, somebody started here, but in this certain time frame, one, he has to stay with me, and two, he also has to expand his relationship with me. And I've now seen a bunch of product offerings come my way, because I've been a fairly loyal little customer for a while. So I'm very curious how that whole thought process is evolved.
Sure. So so two things. One is how do you find out the customer? So if you first, let's look at our landscape. We in the country, there are around 1 billion customers who are 16 plus age. Airtel roughly has 330 million customers, 330 or 350 million customers. And these are prepaid customers. Now, anything else which the telco is selling will be more expensive than prepaid.
Sure.
So we have a postpaid, which is a premium telco, premium mobility. Then there is DTH is similar price, but it is still, you know, an additional add-on. Broadband is definitely more expensive.
Sure.
Right. And then there are a bunch of other services that we have launched, which is, let's say, an XSafe camera recently launched, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
So what do? We actually have to find out that people who have high affinity towards our brand and they are fairly loyal, like yourself, how can we actually sell another service of ours?
Sure.
And while we do this, you can also understand that whether... So I'll give you an example. Let's say you are a prepaid user, but you use a lot of data.
Okay.
Right. And then in that case, prepaid has a daily data limit. But, you know, you are almost breaching that data limit almost, let's say,
right,
four times a week. So why don't you actually come to our postpaid service where there is no daily data limit, right? So if I know that this is the behavior a certain cohort of customers are actually displaying, we will try and sell them a better product for them, which is postpaid.
Now, in terms of... this, the derivation of this insight that this set of users potentially need this, there are millions of possible segmentation cuts that you will have, right? How do you figure out where to focus or what's worth your while? Because at any point of time, either you like pick up a few, do some bunch of one-time thing and then deliver some outcomes, or you keep automating incrementally. Okay, these five things are now automated. Now, every day I just build new automations which take care of a certain small sub-segment. So what's the lens there?
So automation has to be the key.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, how do we reach there also? So first and foremost, we try and understand what are the actual triggers and barriers of the customer.
Sure.
Once we do that, then we also kind of understand for a particular category, what is the buying trigger?
Okay.
So let's say for postpaid, one of the buying trigger is data affinity.
Frustration with data, limit exhaustion.
Correct.
In some sense.
The second could be, let's say, convenience.
Okay.
Right? Because postpaid is generally perceived as more convenient compared to, let's say, a prepaid. And also, you know, postpaid is also when you have achieved something in life, people feel I should have a postpaid. Right? So this,
that's the consumer creative insight in some sense. It's like that moment of,
correct,
I have arrived sorts
and now I can afford postpaid.
Hmm.
Right? So when you are a student, you really can't afford postpaid and so on and so forth. So
sure.
Let's say this is the customer insight.
Okay.
Right? So then we will build upon it to see which is the customer segment who is having affinity to each of these insights. Right? So for example,
okay,
We will get into our data and see that, okay, who is the customer who has highest data affinity? One of the way to look at this is people who are breaching. The other could be people who are consuming X GB of data over in a month, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, just to put an order of magnitude into perspective, would you be able to share an, you know, indicative lens on how many people are converting to from prepaid to postpaid every day in your ecosystem? Any indicative ballparks?
So that number is in thousands.
Okay.
But, you know, if you see overall, right, the postpaid ecosystem is still much smaller than prepaid.
Absolutely.
I think, so postpaid generally, overall, right, is not more than 10%.
Well, the 10 also seems 10 high. I would imagine even 5% or less, perhaps, but it's probably maturing.
Correct. So, so that is there. But so the thing is, earlier, there were also a problem, and this is a good insider, I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to go to postpaid, people always had to go to our store.
Store and
then convert to postpaid. Mm-hmm. We realized that, by the way, you don't have to change your SIM if you have to go to postpaid.
Correct.
You don't have to do any KYC also.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you have to go to a store?
But this was a process that was somewhere there in the parallel legacy system, and then you decided to get rid of it.
So now, no, that system exists.
Mm-hmm.
But then we realized that any of our high-value customer doesn't want to walk into a store.
Sure.
And high-value customer is the person who will buy postpaid.
Right.
So we built an online journey
where
now, if you have to convert to postpaid, you have to just give an OTP.
Sure.
Now, as soon as we did this,
the
numbers exploded.
Of course.
So
that's one big hack in terms of just an OTP instead of store walk-in. And from the segmentation lens, you spoke about the GB of data consumption, the prepaid, everyday limit exhaustion.
Is there more to in terms of personalization or behavior across different geographies that gets involved here? Because you also spoke about affinity to the whole brand side of things that I've now arrived.
Yeah.
That's a more, it's a soft emotional side of things vis-a-vis hard, tangible data limitation kind of a situation. Yeah. So what else typically is on your weapon list to drive people to postpaid conversions?
So the other thing which we have realized is people love our family plan.
Okay.
Which is, let's
by
say,
design.
Yeah, so, and then for us also, you know, the loyalty increases because if you imagine the whole household is right. on Airtel, so why not? Mm-hmm. So one of our earlier family plans was 999.
Sure.
And we were giving 4 SIM cards. But we realized that this is a great insight, so we changed this to 599.
Okay.
So, which means now you can have 2 postpaid at 599.
Got it.
And this, I think we launched last year. Yeah.
This is more like... family of 4 ke jagah couple of 2 bhi aa gaya.
Correct.
So now you have deeper penetration across Airtel and the family ecosystem.
Plus, you know, nuclear families are increasing. So a requirement of family of 2 is much, much larger.
Sure.
Also, why restrict to an actual family? You know, your friend could also be a family.
Doesn't matter cheaper. As long as you're just basically getting one more guy for the SIM.
Exactly.
Invariably, this would mean what? People, there's a degree of cannibalization because that guy was already on Airtel and now he's on a family plan. Or do you see this more incremental that people are porting from other networks to Airtel because there's a cheaper plan available now on postpaid? I'm
Both
sure there's
happening.
A mix.
Both is happening. But obviously, let's say people who are on prepaid, now they are adopting postpaid a lot more.
So prepaid to postpaid family plan move is the key, let's say, component that is
Correct.
The motivation behind
Correct.
It.
Because you know what also happens is in case of telco, since being there are only 3 players, there is very limited price related, you know,
advantage.
Edge.
Yeah.
So the family plan will exist with the competitive network as well.
You know, the whole lens on talk time, the way it used to be a few years ago, has completely disappeared now, practically, right? I mean, there's no nighttime plan, daytime plan, what plan, whatever plan. Those are a whole bunch of things that became a part of consumer insights. I remember there was this couple all night on the phone. So you had a specific, I don't know, some family plan or something, which was just use infinite minutes in an evening. And those kind of creative experimentation are sort of not relevant anymore because voice is practically a commodity. Is that a fair understanding?
So, you know, if you think about your behavior, especially now, you never think about that, you know, will my talk time go?
Call time?
Yeah.
So, you stop thinking about
everything
it.
Everything is unlimited now.
Right.
So, now...
So, that's default. It's expectation.
Correct. So, now with this in mind, obviously, everything is now gone away. It is a commodity now.
Hmm.
The only thing which is left is data. So, how much data? And then
but
again,
if
you
are...
also
capsule, right? I mean, what is the average data consumption of a prepaid user in India if you were to look at a macro level?
No. So, the data consumption is just increasing. In fact...
I'm sure. But, I mean, there's a certain pace at which will, right? All the YouTube, all the Netflix, all the gaming ultimately have a certain time window in a day. So, it can increase infinitely.
Yeah.
But you will have low data consumers becoming heavy data consumers. Right. And that's probably the way
also,
averages will move.
Also, the... let's say the earlier the data consumption was happening in tier 1s or tier 2s or metro.
Right.
Now rural is also
of
heavy
course
on
everywhere.
So
yeah.
That is also changing.
So at a you know at the company level at the Airtel, would it be safe to assume that the growth in data consumption is happening at a cohort level in some sense? You have the tier 3 cities of rural cohort that you just mentioned. But what kind of numbers are we talking about? Is this let's say a average 2 GB a month to 5 GB a month? What and where is it that's going to saturate? At some level, an urban consumer consuming video and whatever else for 3 hours a day would be the peak of data consumption.
Correct.
I would imagine because any power user beyond this would be a very, very small need. And I don't remember the last time I exhausted my postpaid data, some 50, 60 GB a month. You never end up exhausting it. So that doesn't remain like a compelling pitch anymore or why I will increase my spends. So I'm trying to understand now from the growth lens, if you were to drive this, there is... This guy has to get more data in and this guy has to probably buy finance or buy DDH or buy whatever. So the different segments that you apply and how do you address those segments can next wave of growth is the part I would love to delve deep into.
Right. So for this, we actually have to divide our India into multiple segments.
Let's do
right?
that.
Let's say we start from rural segment.
Sure.
There are a lot of customers still who are on 2G,
mm-hmm.
which means they are not consuming data at all.
Okay.
2G device.
The 2G gang, okay.
Yeah, and this is at least 80-90 million customers.
Okay.
So now these customers...
The last leftover gang.
Which is still 90 million.
In no, like, this is not
in
small,
a country,
of course. Yeah.
Yeah, so in a country like us, last is also huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Now we have what we have seen is everyone who is buying a new handset is either buying a 4G or a 5G handset.
Sure.
Right? So what is changing?
So no more 2G handsets being sold as such. Is that a
stat? They're being sold, but if you have to, let's say, upgrade in rural area also, you might prefer a 4G handset because data is something you want. Or let's say you want to watch YouTube.
Increasingly, this is, I mean, the 2G handset business is a dying business. Safe to assume that?
So
there'll be a small bunch of, let's say, whatever small bunch of people who will buy their first phones as 2G phones, perhaps. But that's a very, very tiny segment.
Plus, the smartphones are becoming cheaper day by day.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and this is the second market also.
Exactly.
So
now this segment is also moving to 4G, which means we have to cater to this segment and also ensure that there are enough data speeds, which is available in this market as well.
An operations coverage topic, right? That you have to have the infrastructure to make it happen.
Correct.
From a marketing lens, what do you do to make this, let's say, in your favor?
So, from, in fact, just to before even going to marketing lens, from ops lens also, what we did was last year, we have started rolling out sites in rural.
Sure.
So, around 30,000 sites is what Airtel has rolled in last around a year or so, because we know that here is where, you know, the next wave of growth will come.
Yeah.
Right. Now, the second thing is, how do you educate them? Right. So education also happens, and now there are multiple channels. So, in case of rural areas, you obviously try and get to the influencer of that particular area to actually
talk
about
it. At the scale at which
it.
You operate, it's influencers at play still?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Especially in rural areas, influencers play a huge role.
Wow. Okay.
Because at the scale we operate, but every city or every tehsil is taken care by a person at Airtel.
Okay.
And then you are creating strategies ground up.
Okay.
So yeah. So from that standpoint, if we are rolling a site, which is almost like a factory for us, right? We are investing a capex. We will create a marketing strategy around that site. So if there is an influencer that is needed, or if there is a BTL activity that is needed, should we do WhatsApp to our own customers? So we will try and do everything to educate the customer that our network is now superior in your area, which also means higher attention, and or which resulting into acquisition. Right.
Sure. So, in some sense, there's a whole bunch of on-ground, offline components that are coming to aid for a, let's say, 0-to-1 journey in a new geography, which is the small little rural ecosystem now. And then, from here onwards, at what point does digital become a dominant route for growth? Because at some point, you'll want to take, I'm assuming it's more efficient to do these things digitally than to do it offline, because you're much more focused and targeted on the audience you're dealing with. So, you're a first-time to Airtel guy, and this is still dominantly prepaid, I would imagine.
Rural is dominantly prepaid.
Okay. And you were saying that you could break India into multiple segments. Yeah. So, we got through rural. What would be the next item on the agenda?
So, after rural, the next big thing is all the tier 3s or tier 2s of the country.
Okay. The only tiering of cities and rural is one simple lens to apply. That's the first cut to apply, let's say.
That's the first cut to apply. Okay. In fact, more than cities, it can be the income bracket, or let's say the affordability cut, if you can call it.
Yeah, which is what I was wondering, because, you know, it's not like everybody in Bombay is going to be at a certain level of affordability, not like everybody in a village is all at the same level of affordability.
The difference would be, in case of rural, we will still not be able to offer him our other services, let's say a broadband.
Sure.
We can still offer a DTH. Yeah. So from that lens, we also think of our
income,
serviceability.
Income lens, but do you have income information?
Income information, proxies. Everything is a proxy. And so, for example, where are you living is a proxy, right?
Oh, that's because of your KYC address.
No. So, that is not accessible. That is highly regulated. But, you know, you will know that which city you are from.
Okay.
The second thing we will know is how much recharge you are doing. So, we can do the proxy there as well.
Oh, so, I mean, from your recharge, you're able to predict the income of a person? Is that...
Income is too far-fetched.
Yeah, but I'm trying to understand, because demographics can be extremely powerful to, you know, deploy. But to find out first-party data in that ecosystem itself is hard.
I agree. But having said this, you know, if you are we know that if you are recharging, let's say, for a year,
right,
you are definitely have that upfront amount. Correct. So, 3,000 rupees, kaun deta hai wana, upfront, right? Versus if you are recharging only 100 bucks a month.
So, now on a segmentation layer, somebody in a rural ecosystem, but recharging for 3,000 bucks is a kind of user. And between the tiering layer and the, let's say, printed income layer or whatever, proxy to income layer, you have a bunch of segments that are created, okay? And now we're talking about, you know, various segments. What would be, you know, from an attention span perspective, your next item? Okay, this is where my next piece of growth is going to come from.
The next piece of growth is for every telco will come from a broadband business.
Okay.
So, currently in our country, there are only 35 million households which have broadband.
35 million, that's it? That's it. Tiny.
Yeah. So, but it is growing at a tremendous pace.
Everyone is growing at a tremendous pace.
Yeah, everyone needs broadband.
This whole work from home situation would make this like skyrocket, right? But after that also, if it's 35 million, it's still pretty small.
Yeah. So what happened was, in fact, the context of the customer has changed.
Hmm.
At the time of COVID, it was work from home. Right now, broadband is entertainment.
Sure.
So everyone wants to watch OTT on a larger screen,
right,
or at least YouTube on a larger screen, and hence requires broadband.
Sure.
So now this segment is growing at a tremendous pace, but not every household is fiberized.
Not fiberized.
So which means, let's say we need to obviously put a fiber to your household, then only you can purchase a Airtel broadband. So
it's an infrastructure limitation which is going to grow at a certain pace.
Correct.
Of course, could be aggressive. And that's where perhaps a market share battle will also get fought in terms of choosing the pockets you are chasing and those are chasing. But from your lens, in terms of online marketing-led growth, the whole switch of, let's say, a whole bunch of prepaid customers to now becoming fiber customers has to be in tandem with the infrastructure that's already existing.
Correct.
And I'm guessing even if the infrastructure is there, it's not like you have 100% coverage already, because there's a certain adoption curve that will happen. So what is the lens you apply there, and how do you go about making these prepaid guys take your fiber?
First is, in fact, before even going there, I'll also tell you the innovation that that we are also almost about to launch.
Right.
One is, there was a fiber limitation.
Sure.
But now with 5G, you have good speeds. You have almost fiber-like speeds within your household if you are latched on to 5G.
Okay.
So there is a device called FWA.
That dongle ka naya counterpart.
Yeah. So now what we'll do is, this device actually amplifies the 5G data speeds.
Okay.
And powers your household.
But this can be a consumer device.
This is a consumer device. Okay. It will get installed outside of your home.
Hmm.
And you will actually feel it is almost like a broadband.
It's pretty much Wi-Fi.
Correct. So this infra limitation now goes away.
And this would be a function of whatever your 5G tower deployment looks like.
Yeah.
That entire ecosystem can start using this device as like a... is it portable? Can you take it with you?
Not really. It is. But we would not advise, because at the end of the day, our technician will check the 5G signal and then only install.
So, I mean, that's still... Mobile hotspots have still gotten that problem statement of mobility covered, right? Okay. So now you have 5G, and that would help you take a whole bunch of these new prepaid households in the network coverage area too. A potential fiber ecosystem.
Correct.
And that adoption rate, what are the, let's say, tactical components of driving this? Because, I mean, people who want a broadband would also have a set of choices. This is in criteria. Perhaps they still want prepaid. And, or is this within prepaid also people who are above a certain level of monthly spends? How do you choose?
So people, because broadband is one of the most expensive telco product that is available.
Okay.
It will still cost you around $400 to $500 a month. Right.
That still has a prepaid model as well, right? But it's still going to cost you as much.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. So now, and you know, compared to a prepaid, if you, you know, it will cost you $250 odd, right?
But you intend to like sachetize that maybe? Just, you know, smaller sachets, weekend packs, this is that packs. I don't know if that makes it more accessible. Is that of incremental value?
Not really, because broadband is not bought in that manner.
Okay.
Plus for us also, there is a lot of investment, you know, while we fiberize the home.
Plus fiber.
Yeah, so we would not want to give that opportunity where customers just paying, you know, only for the weekend.
Sure.
Because there's a huge lot, you know, lot of cost that is involved from our end as well.
So below 500, it can't be priced yet. If it becomes, if somebody were to compete on that line, then might be. How do you make it a 200 rupee a month broadband? Because what I see happening across multiple categories, right? You see now Netflix doing a 199 mobile only pack. You see Domino's doing a below 99 pizza, because that's where the next wave of growth is supposed to come from. So if you were to take broadband deeper, maybe that 5G device sensor might be cheaper, or is that also the same
cost?
More
expensive.
It's even more expensive.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing is, why people buy broadband is not linked to, it's not immediately linked to money.
Okay.
It is linked to reliability of network. Because if you think about it, you still have data access through your hands.
Sure. Yeah.
You can do a hotspot, watch whatever, but the reliability drastically increases if you have a broadband.
Correct.
So people are more interested on reliability.
And which
price
is where
always
the preparedness, so I'm just trying to understand in terms of the growth of this whole line item through digital means. If you had X number of customers who are falling into this segment and you have a percentage of these upgrading to broadband today, what could happen to increase this space? And so far, I'm sure you've done a bunch of experiments yourselves to make this happen. I'm trying to understand what are the wins from that, let's say, experience, and what are the things that haven't quite been very effective. So if you could share some examples.
So, one of the things that I just was mentioning is we realized that everyone is now thinking broadband and entertainment together.
Correct.
So, one of the biggest experiments that we did was we actually bundled our DTH business to broadband business. So, now there is a plan called 699, starting with 699, where you will get a DTH and a broadband bundle.
That kind of reduces the overall cost outlay. Correct. Between these two things differently. Okay.
And the thing is, we also started giving a box which will now ensure that you can watch OTT on TV. So this $699 bundle will have OTT, will have linear TV, and you can watch all of this on a big screen.
Got it.
So this we realized has actually worked for us, and this event started working, let's say, a couple of years back only, when the customer context of broadband moved from work from home to entertainment.
Interesting. So that's one lens, and that's giving you a certain amount of uplift. What else?
So in case of broadband, the communication or let's say the context is entertainment. Sure. Now the second big thing is, how do you tell customer that you should purchase a broadband or whom to target, right? So in this, in fact, the most complex part is, I cannot target if you are living in, let's say, Delhi.
Okay.
Because you might live in Delhi, but your home might not be feasible. So it is a bad communication or a bad customer experience in a way.
Right.
And we will also lose out on marketing spend.
But do you have a very deep understanding of coverage in your communication systems?
Yeah. So since we have to install a network element, we will even have the lat long of, you know, your society where we are available.
Sure.
But we may not have the lat long of the customer whom we have to target.
Which is what I'm curious about. If you have to, let's say, limit the radius of communication to your coverage.
Correct.
And not waste marketing on people who are not going to get covered. How do you solve for it?
So one is obviously the digital marketing mean, where you can still target people basis lat long.
Lat long based targeting. Okay.
Correct. It becomes too expensive. But that is one way.
Hmm.
The second is, we obviously target more in cities where the coverage is above a certain percentage.
City level, but for city ke andar, like you said, right, the density is not the same. So, there's no technical data-led solution to this that you know the person's location practically.
There is no, but you know, we work with our network team, etc. We are now creating predictive models or MLs to actually say that chances are that this guy lives in an area where, let's say, our broadband is available. But that is still work in progress.
Hmm.
So that is another way to say that through our first-party data, can I actually predict your location? It is difficult. But that's another lens that we're trying to apply.
Got it. So the second segment we understood was on this whole shift to postpaid as a growth lever, so to speak, in your world. What else?
The third thing is, in case of... So for us, retention is a key.
Cost.
So we want to sell as much as bundled services as possible.
The deeper the relationship, the less likely the churn.
Correct. Our numbers also suggest that.
Hmm.
Let's say if you have bought multiple services from us, then the chances are you will not.
If I have three SIMs, I'm less likely to port those three away.
Correct.
Ek hai to phir bhi chances hai.
Usme bhi if all three SIMs are bundled in a single bill.
Yeah, a family plan.
Yeah. So if you imagine if you have a single bill where you get postpaid, DTH, broadband. As a single bill, then the chances are that you might not shift any of your service.
Mm, okay.
So that is why Airtel Black comes in. So Airtel Black is where we are bundling, we are giving you a single bill for all the services that you take from us. So this is another big lever.
And what percentage of your base would be on Airtel Black if I were to share?
It's too small. It's very
early days.
It's very, very early days.
Mm.
Having said this, all the high value customers are trying to now move towards Airtel Black because of the convenience of single bill also.
And this is also, I mean, obviously a subset of the postpaid audience, which means that itself is small and this becomes further small.
Correct.
But are you in a position to apply a Pareto-ish kind of approach here to say that this disproportionate, let's say, ARPU from this audience versus the long tail of prepaid?
100%, but the prepaid scale is too large.
Scale, of course. You know, there's no ignoring this versus that. It's just a matter of where incremental juice can be squeezed out of. Okay. So the whole growth lever around getting more and more people into bundled black plants essentially means that AOVs probably get better. So, from a pricing and bundling lens, you mentioned around the DTH part getting absorbed along with the broadband part, and that in effect is a net gain for the consumer. Right. But is there more to such schemes which help consumers get a net better offering because of being in the Airtel ecosystem?
So, all the Airtel Black offers are cheaper.
Okay.
So, obviously, it is discounted. The second thing is the customer experience is much, much better. There is a dedicated call center, etc. There is no wait. So, what we say is that Airtel Black customer is the premium customer. So, you know, almost put a red cup.
Okay.
And this customer is also a loyal customer. So, why not? Right? For us, the gain is because we retain the customer to a much, much larger...
So, lifetime value is just substantially
much higher.
Which means if I'm a black customer and if I've got a goofy experience, if you lose me because of that goofy experience, it'll be like a substantial loss. But it's a almost a 5 or 10 year LTV. I probably have been there for the last whatever 10 plus years. Correct. So the LTV is insane. But if I have a customer care problem, I should get a red carpet treatment.
Correct.
Is your general expectation. How do you operationalize this in a complex org like this? There's so many physical infrastructures. When I'm standing in a queue at a store, the guy has no idea who I am. So how do you deal with that?
No, so the thing is, you have to ensure that the person should have an idea that who you are.
Sure. But once I talk to him, I'll probably give him my number.
Then only. Before that, it's impossible.
Correct. Right?
So the other thing is, a high-value customer generally doesn't visit a store that often.
Hmm.
So high-value customer will actually try and raise a request either something. On ThanksUp.
Correct.
Or will call a one-to-one. On one-to-one, we have a dedicated call center.
So if a black guy calls one-to-one, he gets a different, let's say, set of
He gets a agents. Highway to talk to almost the agent. The agent is different, more premium, if I can call it.
Sure, better quality training does that, protocols, more decision-making, faster resolution time, faster SLA, so to speak.
Correct. But, okay. And then again, if you go to our store and talk to our agent there, he will also know that you are a black customer.
The moment I've given my phone number, the stuff appears.
Correct.
So in terms of integration of these different systems from a technology lens, now obviously I imagine there's a whole bunch of things that have to happen effectively, both on the, I think, on the Thanks app. What is he based now, if I may ask? Ballparks? Runs into a percentage coverage level?
So at least one, as in 30-40% of our people are on Thanks app.
Wow, that's pretty odd.
Yeah. So.
And that's... driven by the fact that there's the whole prepaid recharge, the postpaid bill payments. What are the big use cases there?
Bill payment and recharge are the basic use cases. But see, why people come on ThanksApp is 2-3 things. One is they can manage their account. So bill payment you can still do on Paytm, etc. But you have to understand how much data is left.
Correct.
You need a ThanksApp.
And in some sense, is this also a correlation that people who are on ThanksApp are tending to be retaining better because they have more control?
100%. First of all, they have more control. In fact, what they also do is they add their family members' account on ThanksApp so that they can manage their account as well.
Sure.
So that convenience is there.
So in some sense, it's the same kind of thing that, somebody who's on a black plus using the ThanksApp, again, even deeper in terms of the retention path, right? The chances of churn are much, much lower.
So we have, as many products as you use for a brand, the chances are you have affinity to the brand increases.
Yeah, so fun fact is the banking ecosystem thinks in the same language. If you have an FD with me, you have a loan with me, you have this with me, you have that with me, you're not going away anymore.
Correct.
So in your case, something very similar applying.
Yeah, Amazon is also doing that. If you have Amazon Prime, Audibles, if you use my...
The Kindle books, for example. Amazon's too much of a monopoly. You're in the same league, I would imagine, but not as much of a monopoly as Amazon is. There's no counterpart to an Audible or a Kindle. In your case, at least there is... couple of other operators, the second one being super tiny now, but at least there's some room for somebody to switch. So Anshul, Airtel is a 25-year-old organization, but dominant market play for a long enough time, and I've been a fan of the brand. I can imagine the amount of effort it would take to transform the entire digital first kind of practices across the entire, always a bit of a journey.
Yeah.
But in terms of just making sure that the customer experience, in some sense, is as optimal, you spoke about the physical experience of a black member at the store itself or the call center itself being much more optimal. What are the other, let's say, elements of this experience where marketing needs to talk to operations to make sure that ops understands the lifetime value of this guy? Because black is just, like you said, just a small segment.
Correct.
There are way more people who need it to be treated maybe better, maybe differently. How do you solve for it?
I think one of the biggest thing that we are trying to solve is there are multiple systems in play.
Sure.
And we have huge fleet. So there is a store, there is a person who can you can come and install, let's say, broadband at your place.
Right.
There is a person who sells broadband also, right? There is an online ecosystem where you can purchase broadband from. The problem to solve is all systems to talk to each other, right? We are work in progress.
It's a work in progress, of course.
Having said this, this is one of the key things that we are trying to solve because at the end of the day, customer wants a 360 degree service, and the service has to be top notch, irrespective of the marketing channel the customer is talking to.
In some sense, do you see that becoming a competitive edge? Because it is a fairly aggressively competed market and every customer which is of high value is a substantial lifetime value, so to speak. One exit means a lot of, let's say, hit to the company.
Yeah.
And it's kind of where you make it hard for people to port out as well, right? Because if somebody has put a port request, there will be some three people who will try and negotiate you out of that port and you can probably sometimes get slightly better deals as well. So, this whole lens of superior consumer experience being the driver of customer lifetime value, is that the central theme from your lens?
So Airtel, in fact, Airtel's competitive edge, mm-hmm. if I can call it, is the customer centricity.
Okay.
So all our meetings or all our strategies around how can we increase our customer experience? Mm. How can we improve this or that? And that is why Airtel Black also came.
Sure.
Right. So we said that we take pride in our customer, in improving our customer experience.
Mm.
So why not almost create a product out of it?
Got it.
Right. So this is one thing that we always try and, you know, go after. So for example, as I was talking about, we have already, you know, deployed around 30,000 rural sites.
Drivers, yes.
This is just because we understood that there are parts of the country where customer experience needs to be improved.
Sure.
Our 5G rollout has been one of the, you know, fastest across the globe. And so, why 5G rollout is important? It is also that few people will move to 5G, which will decongest the 4G site.
Sure.
Right. And the customer experience overall in urban areas will improve.
Fair enough.
Right.
So there's going to be always this whole corporate strategy, infrastructure, physical side of things. And there is a certain set of things that you'll do as a marketer to kind of drive your impact forward, right? And you mentioned about the variety of growth levers. We spoke about rural. We spoke about the fiber upgrades. We spoke about Black getting consolidated. Are there still elements which are in the middle of these spaces which we've so far not covered?
Definitely. So there are. So for example, what we try and see is that there will be pockets where you will realize that some or the other journey has not been digitized completely.
Okay.
To give you an example, if you still have to buy a prepaid or a postpaid, you have to talk to our executive and do the physical KYC.
Okay.
Why can't you do a KYC online? If you right now open a savings account, you do a KYC online. At least there is an opportunity.
That's a technical limitation at the moment. And is that something?
So we actually worked with our regulator and got this approved.
Okay.
Now we are in the process of developing this.
So e-Aadhaar or equivalent based KYC, which is the same as what banks are using, can be used for telcos as well.
Telcos are much, much more regulated because we also have Airtel Payment Bank. And we know the KYC process there is much easier than the telco process.
Okay.
So
now it's also to do with security, I would imagine, right? 100%. I mean, to have a bank account is not a risk to the country, correct. But to have a wrong guy with a SIM card is correct. Dangerous.
And rightly so. But how do you still create that online journey which is intuitive enough? And, you know, we abide by all the regulation.
This is where regulators also have to evolve to make it simpler. But correct. In some sense, this is still about people getting their first SIM cards in life, or is there a lot of inbound port questions also in the same equation?
Both. So our telco density is, you know, almost higher than our population.
Correct.
So almost everyone in the country has a SIM card, unless you are, let's say, a kid, etc.
Sure.
So
which also are now getting, right?
Yeah.
And I would get to that next.
Yeah. So now in that case, what is happening is you either port in or you buy an additional SIM card, which could be because all your Android phones now are dual SIMs.
Sure.
Now with eSIMs coming in, everything is dual SIM, correct. Triple SIM, you know, you can have as many SIMs as you want. So from that point of view, either you are buying an additional SIM card for yourself,
sure,
or you are porting it. And then there is a very, very small segment which is new to the category.
Sure. So in some sense, when we're talking about growth levers, this whole lens around new people porting in and all is an ongoing activity. As a marketer, you'll continue to do some tactical things to make that happen. But I also saw you doing a bunch of stuff with, I think, some amount of hardware. There was security there. I also happen to have a kid's watch now, which is the third item in my family plan. But that's a different product, different company, not yet a part of your marketing play. Try to understand that when you're trying to expand lifetime value of different cohorts of customers, what else can happen, which is of, you know, needle moving impact at your scale, because if it's too tiny, too small a corner experiment, it will not be worth your while. So among your top line items there, apart from the ones we already spoke about, is there anything that still remains out of our what we've discussed?
So innovations is a big key.
Sure.
So we know that if, let's say, you are on our broadband, what are the things that you would want to run on our broadband can be our right to win.
Okay.
To give you an example, we have launched an XF camera.
Right.
Now, XF camera is still in its early stages, etc. But ultimately, what do you need? You need a camera for your home or for your whatever requirement.
Right.
And that camera works on broadband. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, in this case, we are not a hardware company. That we are very sure. Mm-hmm. Right. We are a service-based company. So the innovation here is, we have where if you are having a broadband connection, you can almost add to bill is a feature that we have launched.
Right.
And the camera. So you have to pay $200 a month, and that $200 a month will be added to your bill.
And so the camera is a service in some sense.
Yes. And the service here is that you also get the cloud storage. for a year.
For the video.
For the video that you are...
So this is purely hardware rental plus services. But I mean, if I have to do it like for 3 months, 6 months, that's okay? Or is there a lock-in period?
So there are some lock-in periods, but you can actually...
It's operational.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, you know, our guy will come, install the camera and all of that.
Well, it's hassle because otherwise you buy one from Amazon, this is still going to need work to install, get wired and all of that.
And
okay?
This is very interesting insight. In fact, when we were doing the GTM or launching the camera, we always thought how to talk about it. So we talked about our add to build feature. We talked about the camera is great. You know why? In fact, we also talked about the fact why you need a camera.
Right.
But the selling point is as soon as we told them that the installation will happen on from us.
Right.
You know that was the thing where the customers kind of So
and that's where your strength of that whole ecosystem, right? There has a certain fleet that already exists to kind of install fibers and all of that. Yeah. The same bunch of people can be extended to do this as well.
Exactly.
So the service experience becomes superior. So one of the things we see happen across multi-LOB companies is typically every LOB head will also have his own charter. It happens with banks all the time that the guy wants to sell FDs versus loans versus vehicle loans versus home loans. There are different people.
Correct.
And ultimately as a bank, they're not equipped to look at the customer as a singular view. There's no one RM who can talk everything. They'll be like one RM, oh, if you want a loan, I'll get this guy introduced. In your world, is there a similar parallel or is it more like, we understand all of these and ultimately the customer gets a unified experience.
So in our case, we also have similar verticals. But so what we have done is how the company is structured is we will have a category head for broadband, a category head for prepaid, category head for postpaid. So each line of business will have a category head.
Right.
But then there will be horizontal functions like mine.
Sure.
So let's say my function is online growth, which is a horizontal, which caters to all lines of businesses. Then again, let's say the brand function will be in horizontal. The CLM function will be in horizontal.
CLM is the customer lifetime management.
Yeah, so but CRM or CLM.
Let's just solve for the competing interests of different people. You know, for instance, I came in for the first time. I could be buying that 5G thing or I could be buying broadband and they are potentially competing offerings. What is the lens on judging how to go about this?
Depends. So for example, when you walk into a store, that is almost like an horizontal, which essentially means that the store person has responsibility to sell everything.
Sure.
So from that point of view, that person will actually try and get, he'll try and understand what is your requirement. And then accordingly sell. So for example,
still somewhat inbound in terms of a walk-in because you probably come in with a specific ask. When you try and allocate marketing spends, in digital, even communication is a spend in some sense. How do you rationalize that, okay, this is what I'm going to allocate towards and this kind of KPIs should come? Vis-a-vis, this is an alternative which could also deliver a similar KPI, but then I'm choosing this over that or allocating this versus that.
So, generally speaking, in telco, it is a journey. So, what I mean to say is that, let's say, if you are an Airtel prepaid already, then I will sell you a postpaid DTH or a broadband. This also depends what kind of user you are.
Sure.
Let's say if you are a prepaid and you are showing very, very high data affinity, then I might sell you broadband or postpaid. But if you are showing us very, very high content affinity, then I might nudge you via broadband plus DTH combo.
Got it. So in terms of segmentation, determining the next best action, so to speak, more than the business, the category guy can't come and tell you do this for me, do that for me.
Correct.
He has a certain goal to achieve, but that'll get achieved via a more horizontal decision-making framework, which is more user-centric.
Because all these teams being, the good part is my team being horizontal is that ultimately I have a customer acquisition cost KPI, which I look at, multiplied by the LTV which I will generate against that customer acquisition cost. So then the team has to judiciously spend, saying that if I would have sold, let's say, a broadband versus a DTH, and the customer would have bought, then did I really miss out?
Sure.
Or should I have sold a combo of DTH and broadband and I could have gained more LTV versus selling only one service?
Got it. You know, the amount of first-party data you guys are sitting on is probably the biggest among most industries and companies. So you pretty much know how many calls I'm making, when and what and how of it. In terms of interpreting any of this data for purpose of business or decision-making or action, to what level does it get involved? You know, does my calling log history, my timestamps, my SMS history, my app usage have any bearing on how it deals with me?
So the thing is, you're right. The first party data any telco has is like immense. We almost say that the data which the Google and Facebooks have almost built a business out of it. But the thing is, having data and, you know, having this data in a very, very structured form are two very, very different things.
Okay.
Right. For telco, imagine if I start computing on number of calls, the amount of infra I need.
Sure.
You only would do, you know, hundreds of calls, right? And then there are 350 million customers who are getting calls and doing calls. So for us to actually maintain that infra is like,
at this point, huge. Not even necessarily worth your while, because correct. Google monetizes it to a very substantial level. Yeah. But from the lens of given the fact that you have this user base that you have, is there another lens of monetization which is just data monetization? I've seen other countries have business models around this.
No, definitely there is, but there are two, three things if you have to actually go that way. One is you have to ensure that all data points are structured,
sure,
which can then be monetized. The second thing is you have to ensure that, because telecom is also a very, very highly regulated industry. Space.
Mm.
In the regulated industry, how much data can you actually monetize?
Right.
Is another lens that you have to almost look
fair
into.
Enough.
And then you have to almost find ways, right? Because there are so many DSPs already around, right? So what do you do? So that monetization, yes. But how
is it? Still early HBI to kind of have a conclusive tricky. Stance. Fair enough. All right. So back to our original lens on growth levers and how devices are playing a role. And what's the next big frontier? You know, what do you see happening in 2024, which would be like a meaningful needle mover or one experiment that you're really eager to see the outcomes of?
So one of the big things that we are working towards is the FWA that I was just speaking about, because this now helps us break the barrier of infra. And we will now be able to sell broadband to a much, much larger audiences.
Sure.
So that is one big lever that, in fact, is about to launch. The second big lever is the add-to-bill of XL that I spoke about. We just piloted that in Delhi.
The camera device.
Yeah. Okay. So the Delhi pilot just got over. So now we'll launch this to 100-odd cities, etc. And then see how the selling happens. So these are the two big, let's say, proposition-led interventions that we are doing. The other thing what we have seen is adoption of digital, or let's say buying telco via digital, has increased tremendously.
Digital via telco. Okay.
Buying telco via digital.
Okay. Buying telco as in the first SIM card via digital.
First SIM card, first broadband. So in fact, whenever you purchase a telco, telco is never the first product that you purchase if you are a digital native.
Okay.
Because telco is still complex. You still believe telco means you have to go to a store and then talk to a person and then do it.
Mm-hmm.
But however, people who are now becoming e-com purchasers have increased significantly.
Sure.
In fact, the number which I was reading was around 220 million, which will go up to 500 million in 2030.
E-com purchasers.
Sure. So now, if that's the case, we have to ensure that these people would obviously expect that we also have all the journeys in place so that they can purchase, etc. So this is a big needle mover for us. We are being ready. We are already, a decent part of our business coming through online. But how do we scale this up?
This is digital acquisition.
Digital acquisition is a big, big thing.
Right. And this is primarily the telco acquisition. So one more data point to understand, really. If you were to, let's say, make a Venn diagram around the different services that you offer, the products that you offer, would everything be a necessary subset to the prepaid ecosystem, that the entire world of broadband is 100% either they're using a postpaid or a prepaid? Or do you also have a bunch of people coming in purely through the broadband ecosystem? Or is that a large part, of all, let's say if there's broadband acquiring 100 customers in a year, how many of them are new to Airtel in some sense?
So they're both. A large part is prepaid, but there's a significant part for DTH and broadband who are non-mobility. Non-mobility means non-prepaid.
So the first time entry to Airtel is happening via DTH.
Correct.
Or via broadband.
Via broadband. And then we try and nudge them that, if you are happy with broadband, maybe you can try our mobile services.
Lifetime value / the whole customer journey of evolving these guys through the Airtel ecosystem would be a bit different from the prepaid to postpaid, because the entry ticket size itself is a bit different.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I'm sure there is this pretty common buzzword around AI being deployed across various touch points. At the scale at which you operate, it's perhaps humanly impossible to absorb and then translate all of that data into action. Where is it playing a role for you today? What is the expectation going forward?
So for us, AI ML, we are trying to figure out where all can we use AI ML. One of the key thing is that how can we predict better?
Mm-hmm.
Which essentially means, if you go on Facebook, try and do digital marketing, there is a lookalike audience that you create. Can we create our own lookalike audit?
Okay.
Can we almost say that which is the next 5 million or 1 million customers who might purchase broadband because of their past behaviors, and then maybe target them?
Sure.
That is one part. The second part is, can you act, so because India is huge, right? You cannot expect one language to fit for all. And with us, what is also happening is, now in tier twos and tier threes also, people want to purchase, let's say, a broadband or a DTH.
Right.
So when we communicate, we have to communicate in their own language.
Sure.
But with hundreds of campaigns going on, how do you translate them well is also a tremendous task.
I can imagine.
So we are figuring out a tool, or let's say, how can we create our own AI model to actually say that a English language can actually be converted into a Tamil.
Sure.
Flawlessly, right? So that is another way. It's a difficult thing to crack.
Do you have evidence to say that this will give you incremental value? Is there anything experiments you've done, let's say, with some Gujarati action somewhere, and then seeing, okay, the conversion funnel looks so much better?
Yeah. So in fact, all our SMS communication already only goes in Varnak.
Okay.
Because we have seen that English versus Varnak gives you much, much better CTR.
Sure.
The problem to solve is, how do you execute at this scale?
At the level of frequency, which is kind of where I thought the automation might slightly make it slightly easier, because all of your lifecycle campaigns, if they're automated, that's a one-time translation job for all of those communications. But this whole moment marketing, or those campaigns which need everyday execution, will still depend on the translation effort.
In fact, moment marketing is also has to happen via automation, because if you have to send a campaign basis a particular trigger, it has to be automated, else you are late. Right, almost.
But those external triggers might not appear into your system automatically. Somebody has to plug that data in.
Correct. Whatever triggers that we can gather,
sure,
that has to be
automated.
Yeah, so that is happening. But the thing is, right, you still have to change communication to maintain, let's say, CTRs or funnel efficiency.
Yeah.
And every month or every week or every three weeks.
Yeah, so the content personalization / language adaptation is going to remain very critical. Right. You know, on that note of personalization, it has multiple dimensions, and including the choice of channel, including the choice of language, like you said, including perhaps the time at which you communicate, perhaps you use WhatsApp over SMS over email, right, because you have those channels, you have push notifications in the channel. What's your lens on allocation of, let's say, if you're communicating with a customer X times in a month, how do you allocate across channels? Is there a affinity-based preferences, or how does it work in your world?
So there are two, three things that we apply. One is the channel affinity, which essentially means that if you as a customer has much, much higher affinity to respond to a push notification versus an SMS, I might not send you the SMS at all.
Sure.
Because I don't want to spam you.
And also SMS costs money and push doesn't.
SMS,
is that a
for us,
I mean,
no.
For you, it doesn't.
Yeah, so,
of course.
So, but irrespective, right? Because ultimately for us, it is also important that your customer experience remains intact. So there is a huge, in fact, there is very, very high stringent governance models that we have written, where we say that a particular customer will only receive X amount of communication in a month.
Applicable to, I mean, you have different ecosystems, right? You have the Airtel Thanks app, and you have a whole bunch of people who don't have the app, and then you have the Wink users, and then you have other users who probably don't have either of these two apps. So how do you control this across?
Because the CLM is the horizontal.
You mean to say, if Airtel is sending me bill reminders, will Airtel Finance not try to sell me finance?
I'm saying that if you're getting an SMS, and you might get both, but there is an upper limit. There's an upper limit.
So for example, these systems are not disjoint in some sense. They're all going through the same cadence and frequency gapping.
Correct. And they're also, again, everything
evolving,
is work in progress.
Course, yeah.
But let's say if it is a single channel, then it is all staged. But you have to look at push plus SMS plus WhatsApp. Then it can be working.
Sure. Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. I mean, the kind of level of scale, the legacy, and the complexity of the infrastructure you're dealing with is quite insane. So that makes it mind-boggling as well as an exciting problem to solve. Okay. Does the commerce part of the communication cost ever become a factor as well? Because the scale at which the amount of money Facebook would make from you for all the WhatsApps you send could be quite crazy as well.
So 100%. So, but the good part is everything is linked to CAC.
Sure.
Whatever channel that you use. You have to justify the CAC against the LTV. If that is happening, then you can use WhatsApp, you can use Google, you can use whatever. But the final number has to be the customer acquisition cost.
One more dimension to this, given the scale of first-party data that you're sitting on, the whole dimension of places like Facebook and Google, where there's room for doing custom audiences, and given that cookies are supposed to have a problem area very soon, is the deployment of custom audiences across these places an important line item in your to-do?
So cookies, so we also know that the cookies will go away, right? So we are also trying to be prepared for the cookie-less world.
Sure.
So we are figuring out, in fact, Airtel recently invested in a data clean room.
Okay.
Right. So we are also figuring out what will cookie-less world be right. like. So Facebook and Google are also deep partners for us, right?
Of course.
We also work with them to understand how this world will look like.
Sure.
So yeah, so right now we are at a stage where we are figuring this out.
Sure.
Like any other brand.
Hmm.
But we have to be prepared.
Awesome. So well, I think it's a very exciting place to be. The pace of change, if it's happening at a startup scale at an OYO, I can imagine every day is a new question and new problem to solve. Only caveat or difference there being the needle moves by, I don't know, millions of rupees every day, if not more. Thank you so much for this conversation, Anshul. I had a great time, a lot of learnings. I hope you enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, Ankur, for inviting me. It was great talking to you.
You know, I'm still reeling from all those valuable insights Anshul shared with us. It was a lot to take in, but I guess necessary to help us understand how giants like Airtel drive retention in an industry when one bad experience can prompt customers to switch providers. What are your thoughts on this podcast? What stood out to you? What else would we do better? Would love to hear from you. And which other growth leaders would you like to hear apart from Anshul? Let us know. Mail us on sorm podcast@webengage.com. Before you go, don't forget to follow, subscribe, and rate us on your favorite podcasting platforms, whether it's YouTube or Spotify or Apple or Google. This is your host, Ankur, signing off.